anybody in the world that wanted to go up and talk to Bob could do it. He would, he'd give time to everybody. I mean, I try to copy that way. You know, I mean, when you get stopped in the streets, you get stopped in Newcastle. If I walk down Newcastle, I get stopped in the streets, I get asked for autographs, I get, can you stop and have a picture taken with me two kids and things like this. Bob went through exactly the same. And I mean, he was a lesson to me, because I would probably have said, I'm in a rush, but not Bob. And I learned that, you know, whoever wants you, help them, do it for them.
This is the Sports Show on 101.4 on FM. That was Jack Charlton talking exclusively to on FM radio about his good friend Bobby, Sir Bobby Robson, earlier today. More of that coming up in a minute. Also on the show tonight, we'll be talking to Peter Davis from WeAreTheRangersBoys.com, and we'll also be talking swimming, the Ashes and rugby. But first, Rob, Bobby Robson, a true football legend.
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. The word legend gets banded around a lot in football, but Sir Bobby Robson was very much a legend. Everyone related to him, footballers, the fans. He just was the man who could walk in the street and everyone just, you know, Bobby Robson was Bobby Robson. There won't be another one like him.
Like, Rob, I don't think I remember a week in football for quite some time where there's been such an outpouring of kind of emotion and such a feeling of warmth and affection towards somebody in football.
Absolutely. Just look at the minute silences or applause. You know, the respect towards the man up in Newcastle, especially. You know, he's a Geordie at heart. You know, he's but it's football. He is football. And Ipswich Town, obviously, he's well remembered of his time with Ipswich Town. But it's just, you know, Sunday League would have been looking at Bobby Robson. Non-league footballers, everyone had that sort of respect for him.
And as well as being a nice guy, Rob, he was a high achiever, right? People remember him, Ipswich, England, and the World Cup.
Well, this is it, you know, Rob. The guy, his career is amazing. He had a successful playing career. He won 20 England caps, played for Fulham, West Brom, and ended up playing in Canada for Vancouver Royals. His managerial career, won the FA Cup with Ipswich Town, won the UEFA Cup. You know, obviously went off and did it in Europe, PSV, Sporting Lisbon, Porto, Barcelona, the England job, you know, the penalties, 1990, Gazza in tears. And Bobby was so dignified through it all. The press destroyed Bobby Robson during them England years.
Do you have any personal, you know, any personal favourites yourself, Rob? You're a big football man. Any favourite memories, stories about Bobby?
You know, the one I like was he's well noted for forgetting names. And the question was put to the Newcastle striker, Shola Amayobi. You know, what does Bobby call you in training? He says, Cole Court. But everyone loved him for it. No one held it against him. And the other one was when he took the Newcastle job. And they asked him, you know, about his age. And he just turned around and said, you know, which way are you looking at? Am I old or am I young? You know, so he had an answer for everything. He was quick with his tongue and he'd be sorely missed.
Rob, there's been huge praise this week. You know, footballers past and present coming out singing Sir Bobby Robson's praises. And Jack Charlton, 1966 World Cup winner, spoke exclusively to the Sports on FM team earlier today, and I asked Jack about his relationship with Bobby Robson. Here's what he said.
We sat and played cards together, and we had a drink or two, and he was just a jolly lad who was a friend of mine.
Can you tell me what type of character he was in your younger days around that period?
Bob was a good coach. I mean, he was a very good coach. He was like I say, that came later in his career. I mean, I was nominated. I was a staff coach in the FA, with the FA,
right?
At Lillieshall in those days, and Bob was the same. So and we worked together. We spent time together, and we discussed things together. And he was, you know, always a smile on his face. He'd ever, whatever you saw, Bob, he'd make for you, and you would make for him.
Did you look up to him, Jack?
Not particularly. No, he was a pal of mine. I mean, I know he was the manager of England, I think, when we beat them in Italy, didn't he?
Well, there's a very famous photo of you and Bobby Robson leaving the pitch in Italia 90 after the 1-1 draw in Calgary.
Calgary.
Back in Italia 90. and yourself and Bobby leaving the pitch.
Yeah, we drew one each. That was it.
Lineker scored for them, and then Sheedy scored for
yeah, that's right. I remember it now.
But you can see from that photograph, you know, that you were more than acquaintances anyway.
Well, we were. I mean, I must say, Bob being in the northeast of England, we both get invited to various dues that happen up here. And if I go, Bob's there. Not, he's not there because I go. He's there because he's there.
Right.
And we always say hello. We always his wife is, she comes with him. My wife goes with me, and we just got on well together.
And I suppose it's no surprise really the outpouring and the affection that, you know, that he's been shown over the last week. But he's always been shown, he's always had a special place in the hearts of football people, I think.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, you see, when I finished with the Irish at 60, I called it a day. Because I'd worked in the game long enough and done enough, and I called it a day. I could have gone elsewhere and done other jobs, but I didn't want to. But Bob was totally different to me in that. He wanted to go and be a manager. And I mean, when he was at Newcastle, he was in his early 70s.
That's right.
And
what do you think drove him on to continue to remain in the game, even going from Newcastle, going back and, you know, becoming involved with the FAI?
I think it's probably just. I mean, managers in that didn't get paid fantastic money like goes about today. I mean, Bob had to earn a living, and I'm sure he did. And he did it in football. I did my living in doing after dinner speeches and doing and opening things and closing things.
Sure.
And that was where I made a living out of it. Now Bob made a out of football. I mean, he went to Portugal. He was in Holland. I used to bump into him all over Europe. Whenever I went to see a game, he would be there.
Was it tough, Jack, when you would come up against Bobby in a managerial sense, like that match back in Italy in 90, like the game in 88 in Stuttgart when Ireland beat England 1-0?
No, I mean, Bob wasn't a manager then, was he? Or was he?
88, yeah, Bobby 88 and 90. Bobby took over the 86.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you see, I can't remember things that are different because there was nothing different. It was always the same with Bob. I used to travel with him in Europe. We used to fly into Holland when he was a manager, and he would have a guy and pick him up in a car in Belgium for some reason, and he would drive in from Belgium, and he'd pick me up at the Amsterdam airport.
Okay.
And he'd pick me up there, and then we'd go to the game, and then we'd come back, he'd drop me off again, and then he'd go back to Belgium. I don't know what he went back to Belgium for, but it was probably some business that he had.
He's regularly portrayed in the media, Jack, as being very, quite a gentle person and amiable. And
yes, you got to say, anybody in the world that wanted to go up and talk to Bob could do it. He'd give time to everybody. I mean, I try to copy that way. You know, I mean, when you get stopped in the streets, you get stopped in Newcastle. If I walk down Newcastle, I get stopped in the streets. I get asked for autographs. I get, can you stop and have a picture taken with me two kids and things like this? Bob went through exactly the same. And, I mean, he was a lesson to me because I would probably have said, I'm in a rush. But not Bob. And I learned that, you know, whoever wants you, help them, do it for them.
He must have had a steelier side, though, Jack, for what he achieved in football.
He got a knighthood, Bob, which was not before time. And he got a knighthood, and he's Sir Robert.
Sure.
Sir Bobby.
Sure.
And which is a great honour. And I mean, he's got involved with his charity when he found out. He had cancer to the top of his mouth when I saw him in Portugal.
Right.
I remember bumping into him in Portugal. We went to a meeting in Portugal with the FA, you know, for the teams that had qualified to play in the World Cup. And It was in Portugal, and we went over, and Bob came back. In fact, I remember the manager from that was at Chelsea. What do you call him? The
Mourinho.
Mourinho. He was. He worked for Bob. He was a translator for Bob. I remember him sitting on. I was sitting on the bus when we went out. We went to this meeting, and he sat on the bus, and Bob was the boss.
Right, right.
I mean, I found it very hard, and you never ignored Bob in any way, shape, or form. If you saw him, we went. I did a bit of business with him over the last 3 or 4 years, and I saw a bit more of him in these.
Sure.
And because it was business, and he had an office in Newcastle, and I went to the office a few times, and. But I know Bob well, and it's difficult trying to say it to somebody.
Was he the same man inside and outside of football?
Exactly, exactly. He was the same sort of person. He'd talk and talk, and he was like me. He forgot names. Or he pronounced names in different ways. We're both Geordie lads, and we both didn't pick them up as well as that. And that...
Were you surprised, Jack, when he followed a path that you... blazed so spectacularly with Ireland, that Bob came in and was appointed by the FAI along with Steve Staunton. Did that surprise you at the time?
No, it didn't at all. It didn't at all. I mean, like I say, Bob had to earn a living.
Sure.
And he left. He went there when he left Newcastle, didn't he?
He went after Newcastle. That's right.
Yeah, he went after Newcastle.
But he was met with a similar warmth in Ireland as it reminded me of when you were there initially.
There's nobody I know and nobody I would want to know who's ever said anything bad about Bob. He's just a good lad. He was very friendly, very nice. He knew the game of football. He worked very hard at it. He was employed by all sorts of different teams. I mean, he worked all over Europe, and then he came back and worked in England. I think he worked in Canada as well. I remember seeing him in Canada. I bumped into him up in not Canada. What do you call it? I was in Vancouver, right. And Bob was with the Whitecaps then. And then I went up to Alaska, to Anchorage in Alaska, and there was a football tournament on there. And I went up, and who was in charge of the tournament? Bob.
And do you think, Jack, he'll be, you know, he'll always be remembered as in management for the time he spent with England and the role he played with England, Mexico 86, the Argentina match, Italia 90 getting beaten by the Germans on penalties.
I remember, I think I said this on the television, on the radio, one of them that came to see me, that Bob, I remember when the penalty shootout, when I think it was the last penalty went in and somebody missed it.
Sure.
And they put a camera on Bob's face. And he just looked at it, and you could see how sore he was.
Right.
And I thought, very bad for Bob, that, you know. And but he tolerated it. He just smiled at the players as they came off and accepted what had happened.
And I suppose through that period and before that World Cup, particularly in 86, he received quite a torrid time from the media, but he always seemed to conduct himself very well, and I suppose in many senses he showed people how to deal with the media.
I don't know about that. I've done very little work on television with Bob, and I've done very little work with radios or newspapers with Bob. I've known Bob that many years. I think I've known Bob something like 50 years. And I always consider him a good pal. Nice to see him.
Jack, that's great. I suppose, would your outstanding memories of him be in a football sense, or just as a personal friend, and in a personal sense as a friend?
It was always in football. It always had something to do with football. The things I did with Bob happened over the last 3 or 4 years were all to do with football. And I bumped into him when we went to various charity organisations and things here, and what do you call it when you put... you give the trophies to people who have done well in the northeast of England, you know, and all that sort of...
Sure.
That sort of thing, and I got involved with Bob and all of that, and was, if we went to the... I've been at the top table a few times with him. But I'll miss Bob, you know, I will miss him.
That was Jack Charlton talking about his good friend, the Bobby Robson, Sir Bobby Robson, who will always be missed in football. We're going to take a quick music break, folks. Back after this.
Hi, you're listening to The Sports Show on 101.4 on FM. Joined in the studio with Peter Davis from WeAreTheRangersBoys.com. Pete, thanks very much for coming in.
No problem at all.
Pete, the online world is where everyone goes for their football news these days, and you've started your own website. When did WeAreTheRangersBoys.com come to age?
Well, it's approximately almost 2 years ago, and that came about because Flavio was taking over, Bernie were coming in. It was about a month into the new season, 2 seasons ago. We just got beat by Orient.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, and we had a pretty bad team at that stage, and the idea came about once we knew that the takeover was going to take place. So we sort of bought the domain name, WeAreTheRangersBoys.com, and it's gone from strength to strength, from having 10, 20 posters. I mean, now we're privileged in having near enough 2,000 members, and there's a lot of guests that visit the site as well.
Brilliant stuff. When you say we, how many are involved in the website?
Well, it's gone from 2 people, it's now 10 people.
Okay.
I'm more the guy that does the interviews. We've interviewed ex-players on there. We're lucky enough to have had Paul Parker, Clive Wilson, and we store them on there. And then I've got a techie guy who does all the technical stuff and puts it all up and makes it look good. And then obviously moderators look after the site as well.
Now, I've obviously been on the site for my research. It's very different to the official site. Did you feel there was a need to have something other than the word coming out of the club?
Yes, I did, because every fan wants to know what's going on. Because it's my sort of passion, if you like. To me, it's sort of my life outside of my job. And I get to hear quite a lot of stuff that goes on. And I suspect the official site can't put up certain things.
Yeah.
I mean, if I go out and watch a game, I can give my honest opinion about how a player's performing, where the official will have an official line.
Yeah.
But with this site, I'm able to give an opinion, and it allows supporters to have an opinion as well. Some would say I'm a bit too positive, but there you go.
And I'm just wondering, do you get any player interviews with the current squads? Do you get guys talking to you, maybe giving away some info?
We did try, actually, to be fair. About a year ago, I went down to the training ground. I do know the players quite well, but I think because the QPR, I've got the official site, QPR World, that's one of the areas where they have player interviews.
Sure.
And it was sort of, I was asked politely not to do it. But it gave us opportunity. I mean, we'd like to be able to break barriers and do something different to other websites. So if you're not allowed to speak to current players, we went for ex-players.
Sure.
And you find them very receptive.
And do you have a journalism background? How did you, you know?
Absolutely not. It's something I've always wanted to do. I mean, I've always wanted to sort of work in radio, but absolutely none at all. I think if you've got a passion for something, that comes across.
Sure.
And I started off really badly in terms of interviews, but you get better as time goes on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this summer, what have you been doing to your website? Any updates?
Well, this summer we've actually changed the old format message board to a much more... it's run by VBulletin, and it allows people to do so many more things. We try to keep fans on there. There's arcades on there. There's competitions on there. I mean, we run... luckily, we have one sponsor that sort of donates money for the site, and we're able to run competitions on first goal score for get £10 and or last man standing, things like that. So a little bit of fun, but at the same time allows fans to get involved with the club.
Sure, and talking about the new season now, Pete, it kicks off Saturday, Blackpool. I'm sure your message board is full of messages about the new season.
They are. Some are more positive than others. Obviously, Holloway's coming back this week. He'll have the Blackpool team fired up for this week. I'll be in stiff competition because they've got a drummer as well. And to be fair, the drummer is a proper drummer. I think Magilton will play a different style of football this year to what we saw last year. And any fan would know. I mean, I've had my arguments about Souza. I felt he was rather negative. I thought Dowie was very unlucky to lose his job so early back in October. So for me, it's a fresh start. John Gorman, bags of experience. Think he will do very well. As I say, I had opportunity out in Slovenia to watch the players train at close hand. And the respect that the players were giving Gorman bodes well for the future. In relation to Magilton, he's very much a manager that keeps his distance from the players, which I thought he would be the opposite. I thought we'd intermingle. And what you found was that Magilton would train the guys and then at the end of the training would just be away from them. And then right. Gorman would be the one that would be sort of consoling them, talking and geeing them up.
Because you're a season ticket holder, so you've seen plenty of managers come and go.
Absolutely. Some would say two changes, some would say four changes. Obviously, you put Gareth Ainsworth into the equation there, who's done a terrific job. And to be fair, the two memorable games for last season were where Ainsworth is in charge. We beat Birmingham at home on a sort of snow evening where it was blizzards. And then we came back from Sheffield Wednesday 2-0 down. So, yes, plenty of changes. I think that's obviously to do with the fact that the club wants success.
Sure.
And some fans will question the amount of money that we're not spending. But these guys are pretty ruthless, as you can see with Flavio in F1. I mean, he just recently got rid of his driver, so they're hard to please.
Absolutely. So, Pete, that's brilliant. We're going to just have a little music break, come back, discuss a bit more about the new season, the next 12 months ahead for Queen's Park Rangers. You're listening to 101.4 on FM. This is Rob Brennan with Peter Davis from WeAreTheRangersBoys.com talking about Queen's Park Rangers. So, Pete, not only are you running a QPR website, when you're actually at Loftus Road, you're banging a drum for them. Explain the drum.
I must be mad. It started a few years ago, actually. John Gregory was in charge, and we were struggling. We were big-time struggling. I mean, he had players like Stephen Moore playing up front and Mike Nygaard and players like that. And it was just one game, I think. We kept losing games. It was January, February. It looked like that we were going to go down. And I remember playing Coventry away, and Mike Nygaard struck the ball from halfway line. And we win the game. And then I said to the guys behind me, because I'm quite vocal in the singing, I said, look, on Saturday, I'm going to... It was midweek. I'm going to bring the drum. And to sort of G up the fans, because needed it.
Sure. You know?
And we beat Preston 1-0. And it was one of the best atmospheres. I mean, it's been compared to the Oldham playoff. I wouldn't say it was as atmospheric as that.
Yeah.
But really was sort of... It got the fans going for a short while. Believe it or not, though, some fans don't like it. You know?
Yeah.
You know? If you're sitting sort of 2 yards away, you can get a bit annoying. I try not to do it continuously throughout the game, so at appropriate moments. But it's good because all the players assign the drum, and, you know, fans do know me for the fact that I go in the corner. But as I say, getting a bit old, I think I promise on air that if we get promoted, the drum goes away.
Absolutely. QPR's pitch is very close to the crowd. Do you feel that with the drum, the added atmosphere can play a part this season?
I think we've got one of the best grounds in the country in terms of what it can give the player. The unfortunate thing is it can work against as well. I mean, last year we saw in instances like Gavin Mann against Ipswich and certain players that got singled out. You had Lee Camp, who was replaced by Radek Czerny. I mean, fans were singing for Lee Camp as soon as Czerny's been signed from Tottenham.
Sure.
So it can work against and it can work for. I'd like to see less of the booing, and that does come into play, I think, because fans spend good money to go and watch the club play, you know?
Do you feel that you're getting value for money going to Loftus Road at the moment?
Value for money finishing 11th? I don't think so. The board would have expected last season to be much better than what it was. I mean, the employee in Dowie, from the point of view of, you know, there was rumours about sort of interference from outside. We can't really know too much about that. But obviously Dowie goes in October, Souza then comes in. And for me, it was never what they expected. And I do sense a different approach this season.
The board have been a lot more quieter this summer. Since they've named Magilton, I haven't heard anything out of...
Absolutely. We've not heard anything from Flavio. I mean, I've heard that he's probably away until September. Obviously, he'll come to watch the matches, but he has kept a distance. And you would notice also that Jim Magilton is now being called manager.
Yeah.
Whereas last year they were called coaches. I get the sense they'll probably learn from the mistakes. And we all talk about this four-year project. We're 2 years into it. At the moment, it's not working. And they must be clever enough to know that's not working. And with the people that are in charge, I cannot see how it can fail.
Now, you are loyal, Pete. There's no doubt about it. You've been out to Slovenia and Croatia watching Rangers in pre-season. I'm usually sat in the press box at Loftus Road. I haven't seen them play yet. How are they looking? How are the new signings looking?
Well, I think fans, you know, will get the opportunity to watch Fallin, who we don't know whether he's bought for $3.5 million, but that's what the official line was.
Yeah.
It could be sort of added on bonuses. I've got to say that when I was out there, he looked class.
Yeah.
In relation to Pelikori, this is obviously a strange one for Mavrilino in Serie B. I think he'll take a bit of time to get accustomed to the way we play.
Because there was Sammy Di Carmine last year was an Italian striker.
That's right. I think fans were hoping not to go down that route again, yeah, because Di Carmine comes in, scores two goals the whole season. Defenders would be proud of that kind of record, you know. But with Pelikori, I think a sense, because I'll give you a very brief story, actually. When we was out in Slovenia, he actually coming back the same airport as us, and the rest of the players were booked for Graz Airport. And there we were in the middle of Slovenia with the new Italian signing in the back of a car coming out of on the streets of Slovenia asking the directions to the airport. And it was quite funny. First time he ever visited England, and me and my wife were sort of taking him back to the hotel in Heathrow. and the guy simply didn't have any credit cards on him. He was like, had euros and everything. And he sits in the car and goes, oh, it's the first time I've sat on the left. It was one of those really surreal experiences. It really was. But going back to the players, I sense we've got Bazzacchi back this season.
Yeah.
Bad injury last season. Rowlands.
Is he fit?
Yeah, Rowlands is fit. I think he will play the games in the first month of the season. Bazzacchi's a little bit behind in terms of injuries. Ledgerwood has been injured as well. I just get the sense there's a bit more camaraderie this season.
Is there more goals, though? There was a lot of opinions on Dexter Blackstock. Some loved him, others absolutely loathed him. Obviously gone to Forest.
Yeah.
What was your opinion?
I don't know why we got rid of a striker that could potentially score 20 goals. Fans in response to that will say, well, he's never scored 20 goals, but he's never played the whole season. And even when he's played 30, 35 games, he scored 15 goals. And we've not replaced him with a striker. The view is, well, the unofficial line is, that Tarabat from Spurs could be played up front, and he scored a cracking goal against Southampton. That would be interesting to see in the first month of the season.
Because the first month of the season, it's Blackpool Saturday, then there's a nice long trip to Exeter in the League Cup, followed by another nice long trip down to Plymouth, Bristol City away then Forest at home and Scunthorpe away. How do you feel the first month's going to go?
I think it's very important. First of all, you should stay down in Devon for a week because you've got three games down there, Bristol City, Plymouth and Exeter. We need to get the first month underway. I think there's seven games in all. We need to win four games. Bristol City will be tough. Plymouth will be tough. Exeter, you know, it's a cup game. We have to start well. Simple as that.
Are they going to give Magilton time?
They have to. And I think we, the fans, will give him time as well. I don't suspect that we'll be sort of baying for his blood or anything like that early on. You cannot keep changing managers every 3 or 4 months. It's just not a route to success. And I feel that no supporter was really keen on the idea originally of Magilton coming in.
Yeah.
But he's there now. And I think the way we've seen him play in the pre-season, I think we'll see a different style of football next year. And I think he will get the time. Certainly should be given a season to say, right, it's up to you, this is what you should do.
Now, the transfer window runs to the end of August. If you were the man in charge, which position and which player would you go out and get?
Tough one. Rumours are that, you know, Beckford from Leeds is available or certainly will be let go by Leeds.
He's a local boy. I grew up playing with Jermaine Beckford.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd be interested in coming back down.
Well, Bates apparently won't let him go for less than $3 million. And then you come into the point, well, do you wait to January? Because we waited for Ben Watson last year. And then he goes to Wigan. So it's a dilemma. I think it's obvious the club are not willing to spend £2, £3, £4 million on a striker, which some fans will be, well, that's exactly what we need. Who should we get? It all depends who's on the market. I mean, if Manchester United said tomorrow Danny Welbeck is going to go on loan to the Championship club, I'd be in there straight away. But you can't guarantee, you know, someone's going to score 20 goals a season. You just can't. I mean, I'd love to know the stats on the Championship striker that has scored 20 goals consecutively season by season. I mean, Cuerten had a great record for us. He scored 4 or 5 goals when he came, you know. And players tend to have great goal-scoring records when they come to Rangers. It goes.
Well, Pete, I could talk all night to you about QPR and football. Your message board, where do people log on to find out more?
Okay, well, they log on to www.wearetherangersboys.com. That's a bit of a mouthful, but once you're in there, it's got various items on there. We've got classic games. We go back to 70s, 80s. There's a forum on there, obviously, with, as I discussed earlier, loads of opinion on Rangers. There's blogs on there as well. People keep their thoughts on there. And, you know, it's doing well, touch wood. And, you know, hopefully onwards and upwards.
Like the R's. Okay, Pete, thanks so much for coming on to the show. Hopefully we'll get you on again during the season, see how things are going up the road at Loftus Road.
Welcome back to the Sports Show on 101.4 on FM. Brenner production guys put swimming down on the list, Rob. It's not every day we see swimming on the list and the running order here.
I went for a dip myself today, Rob, but what this fella's on about across the way from me, I'm sure we're going to find out.
What is this relevant, swimming? Brent?
What it is you must have read about the new super swimsuit that's been out. It's been actually been out the last 2 years, but there's a lot of controversy surrounding it. We had the World Championships recently in Rome, and we had the double Olympic champion.
Are all the top guys wearing them, Brent?
The majority of them are. Yeah, there's certain who refuse. I'll tell you what it is. It's a performance-enhancing, non-textile suit. What this suit does is it was released by Speedo, the original one, called the Laser. And what it does is...
Sounds good anyway.
It's got a nice name. And what it does is it reduces drag resistance and less friction. So in essence, it stops the drag in your suit, therefore making the swimmers, they say, slice through the water like a knife.
So it's giving them an advantage, Brent, right?
It's giving them an advantage. Basically, there are only now 2 world records which weren't set by swimmers in these suits. That's including men's short distance and long distance, women's short distance and long distance.
So what are people saying about this? Are they saying it's not right? Are they saying, like, it's the way the sport has evolved? Like, what's the bottom line on it now at the moment?
Well, Michael Phelps, who you all remember from the Olympics, absolutely, who won all those gold medals, he actually threatened to not compete in the World Championship if the suit wasn't banned. Rebecca Adlington, as I mentioned before, the double Olympic winner from Great Britain, also refused to wear the suit.
So the ground that they're taking, the stance they're taking, is that what, they're cheating in the suit?
I wouldn't say cheating, but what they're saying is that the suit is definitely having an effect on the time that they're swimming. As I said, there's only, I'll tell you now, 135 long and short course world records have been broken, and that's since 2008. And since this new Speedo suit has been released, apparently there's over 200 new modified suits on the market. And that basically is the discussion point, is whether or not these are within the rules of the game or whether they're not. The announcement made this week was that as of 2010, they don't have an exact date in 2010, but there will be a ban of all these suits, which in essence means that the records that have been set in the last couple of weeks in Rome...
Be unbreakable.
Well, they say will be unbreakable. There's been rumours of them putting an asterisk beside the world record times, as in to say these world record times were set wearing these suits.
So it's a performance answer, Rob, by the sounds of it.
Sounds like. I'm just wondering if you could stick Usain Bolt in the pool, stick him in a suit and shoot him off. Would he break the record?
My point is that, you know, in all sports you have development. If there's equipment involved, there's always been development. I mean,
where do you draw the line, though?
Exactly. I mean, back in 94...
Flippers on them.
In 94 in the football, they had the Predator football boot, which had the new grooves in the boot, which was to make...
Plenty of parents found out about the Predator boot.
Exactly. And it, you know, had to add the curl on the ball and, You know, is that unsportsmanlike? Is that actually a natural thing?
Didn't do much for my career anyway.
There probably isn't a way back. There probably isn't a way back from here, though, right, Brem? When you start introducing things like this, at any level of sport, and records start getting broken, it's hard for someone to say stop. You can only see it evolving further and further and further. And I suppose there's a case from here now. You know, where's it going to end? Because a suit like that is going to get more advanced as the years go by. So I don't know. What's your opinion on that, Rob?
Yeah, Rob. Well, basically, I think it's wrong. Personally, I think swimming in these super techno suits, it doesn't make much sense to me. I'd rather just see them sticking to what they've done before, because I think once you start crossing over the line of getting involved with different technologies, that there's other guys out there that are going to keep improving these suits. And then what are you dealing with? Are you dealing with the best swimmer or the guy with the best suit? It's like Formula One in a sense. Like, you know, they're working on cars. Is it the driver or the car? I don't want to be talking about swimming like I talk about Formula One.
To an extent, but then when you especially, you can look at athletics and, you know, I've heard people say during the weeks, you know, back in the 40s, 50s, they didn't break world records with spikes on their shoes, did they? That's a new invention which has come through in the last few years, the whole spikes, not the last few years, but it hasn't been there since the start of the sport. Brand new, you've got brand new tennis rackets. They don't use the old wooden tennis rackets. So,
but it's got to be an even playing field. I mean, if everyone has to either wear the suit, and the suit has to remain the same for everyone.
Well, that's it exactly. That's your solution, isn't it? You're going to have to implement a ruling that if everyone's competing in whatever distances, they're all going to have to wear the suit. Otherwise, there's going to be discontent. But still, people are going to compete with or without the suit. It's just, I don't know. The one that got me last year when you were telling me about this off air, Brendan. You know, people getting advantages, different sports. The archery last year in the Olympics. I mean, there was more gear on the bow. Like, it looked like it would be harder to miss the target than it would be to shoot it with the bow and arrow. There was sights, weights, you know, the full shooting match, like, pardon the pun. But, you know, so in that instance, like, of course, everyone had it, so it was a level playing field. But, you know, I was thinking myself that I'd nearly get a gold medal, like, with one of those things, like, you know.
I suppose it's just getting the line right between development for the sport, you know, of equipment and development of the sport. It depends how far you want to push things, really. So what we'll do, we'll take a quick music break now anyway, and we'll be back with the Ashes.
Welcome back to the Sports Show on 101.4 on FM. That was Girls Aloud and Biology. Not my selection, Rob, I must say, but
he's tapping his toe over there.
But Brendan, what's happening in the cricket world?
We've all been paying attention to the Ashes, and sadly, the third test didn't go as well as we all thought it would. Australia held out on the last day for a draw. For once, the rain didn't actually help England. Normally, the weather advantage kind of helps them out, but they didn't have enough time to get and bat their second innings.
So, just for anyone who's been out of the country and isn't up in the cricket at the moment,
hasn't read a paper.
What way does the series stand now at the moment?
At the moment, England are winning 1-0 in the series. There's two more tests to play. And as we've spoken over the last few weeks, you can draw a test match in cricket. So if Australia win the next test, it means the fifth test is going to be an absolutely amazing event, tense event.
So the next test is being played in
Yorkshire.
In Headingley. Headingley, yeah, that's right.
I think Yorkshire, that's, and then down to London at the Oval to finish up.
Exactly. So we've got a couple of weeks before we finally find out. But England could have the test wrapped up by winning the next test.
Yep. Any big talking points over the week, Brent?
Yeah, there's major doubts. I know it's been like that the whole series over Freddie Flintoff.
He's not looking good, is he?
It doesn't look like he's going to make it to that fourth test. There's many rumours about who may replace him, but to this day they still don't even know whether he's going to make it.
How badly is he going to be missed?
The way he's played in the test so far, the way he played at Lord's, he'll definitely be missed. At Edgbaston, he didn't have the best time bowling. It's not the easiest of pitches to bowl on. It shifts from front to back, but he had a great innings in the first innings in batting. I think it was over 70 he hit in the first.
Is it a factor, Brendan, that could sway the series Australia's way, or could it make that much of an impact over the next two tests?
Well, it could. I think the return of Australia's Brett Lee could be a major factor, the fast bowler who...
They seem to be saying he's going to be all right, don't they?
They do. He's missed the first three tests, and to be honest, I think, injury or not, he will want to be out there playing this fourth test. He'll want to get Australia back into the series. He's the exact kind of player who can do it. He's a fast bowler, so he can cause damage to any batsman.
I kind of get the feeling that some of the Australian players are grown into the series, Brendan. I mean, I was reading Ricky Ponting during the week saying he was loving the abuse he got when he walked out to the crease in Headingley last week.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was thinking because the ECB are taking the hard line, saying, you know, do not boo Ricky Ponting, it's not sportsmanlike. And then Ponting's obviously come out and said, bring it on, I love it, it's all part of the sport, I think English fans are great. And I think that shows there's a different attitude with Australian towards sport, and particularly Ricky Ponting. He's like, this is why I want to play cricket. Never mind sitting there clapping me, give me dog's abuse.
Ponting hasn't had the best of series, but when you don't have the best of series and you don't play the best, especially for someone like Ricky Ponting and the way the Australians are, they want revenge. They want to come out and prove to the Barmy Army that they're singing nonsense. And I tell you, he'll be coming out looking to extract some revenge in the next test.
Now, Rob, the other big news of the week, the world of rugby, all not going too well.
Well, Rob, I read a really interesting article by Martin Samuel in the Daily Mail, and he was basically talking about how it's often been said that rugby is the gentleman's game, whereas football is the game for the thugs and the hooligans. But with the introduction of money...
Opinion of yourself there, Rob.
Absolutely, all opinion-based. With the introduction of money into the sport, that basically these guys who are seen as the creme de la creme of society... they're going to behave just like the footballers do. They're going to cheat. We've been seeing guys getting banned for drugs at Bath. We saw a guy at Harlequins who decided he was going to go off as a blood replacement when he wasn't a blood replacement, just to get another player on. We saw the gouging in the summer, the gouging incident in South Africa with Mr. Fitzgerald. So what do you think, Rob? You're the rugby man. I'm the football man. Where do you stand on this line that because of money, rugby's changing?
Yeah, Rob, I think what you say is right. I think it is a bit of a sad development, but I think it's a reality of, like you say, the sport turning professional since it did back in 99. Hasn't been a great summer for rugby, just thinking back over the last couple of months. Like you said, the gouging incident hasn't been a great summer image-wise. Personally, I think it's been a great summer with the Lions series. I thought it was fantastic. But no, the gouging incident was damaging. This whole drugs issue now with the Bath players has been damaging as well. And the allegations of cheating from the Heineken Cup last year. So, listen, I think rugby is going to go the way of all modern professional sports.
Someone like Danny Cipriani, for instance, he's a real celebrity now. He's out on the celebrity circuit. He's got Kelly Brook on his arm.
Yeah, and Rob, personally, I think his lifestyle choice probably cost him a place playing for England this year and for playing for the Lions. We said it earlier on in the show this year, if you had spent like more time away from the cameras. This is a bit unfair though, because apparently he's quite a dedicated guy, but like for Joe Public, he was in the papers far too often. Maybe that's a byproduct of having like very good looking celebrity girlfriend, but he wasn't getting credit in the papers for doing rugby things. He was in the papers for the wrong reasons. His form suffered and he lost out in playing for England and he lost out in playing for the Lions. So,
seems ever since, you know, the relationship has come out in the public light, it's completely affected him getting picked for England, doesn't it?
Martin Johnson doesn't seem to be a fan of his players.
Yeah, no, he's looking at fighting his way back into the team. And guy, like, he is actually a brilliant player. And when he's on form, I'm sure he'll probably be there playing for England next year and he'll probably be brilliant.
What about taking British players away from England, going to play in France because they're offering more money?
Yeah, it's all the same. There's a culture there now. It's like high money. People have a like certain time length for their career. It's their profession. They're going to go where they get paid most. So the same issues of loyalty that occur in soccer, where fans say, oh, well, you know, he's not loyal. He's not really into the club. I mean, every player is really looking after his career now. They want the best deal, especially with rugby. And you can get injured far more, you know, far more easily than in soccer.
Rob, in terms of these guys coming from Leinster, being from Dublin, playing for Leinster, if they were to say, oh, I'm going to go follow the money.
Well, the IRFU, actually, the union back in Ireland, have a different system than exists in other countries. They have a foreign player rule, which means only certain provinces can only play a certain amount of foreign players. So
maybe they're a step ahead of this.
Well, it won't actually get to the stage where teams back in Ireland will be overrun by foreign players, and then the identity of the team will be diluted. I think at the moment it's 3 or 4. I'll have to check it up. So, you know, that's quite a visionary move, actually, because it will keep the nucleus of players within Ireland, within those provinces, and I suppose that's what the fans want. They want to see, they want that familiarity between the terraces and the pitch.
Brilliant stuff, Rob. We're basically looking to wrap up our show here. Thanks for giving your opinions again, Rob. We've got a cricket special coming up. We're talking with a guy who produced a cricket bat. What was that about, Brendan?
It's Marcus Fernandez, who created the Mongoose cricket bat, a new cricket bat for 2020 cricket, new invention that he came up with. We also have a representative from Last Man Stands, which is a new cricket league. In fact, it's not new, but it's one of the most quickly taken off leagues in the world. It's a worldwide thing, so hopefully we're going to get a representative from themselves. And we have Peter Ackerley, the head of development of ECB. I went down and interviewed him in the home of Cricket Lords. So yeah, keep a listen out for the cricket special coming up.
And if any listeners have got any ideas or potential guests for our show, please email sport@onfmradio.co.uk. And if you fancy getting involved at OnFM, just go on the OnFM website, onfmradio.co.uk, and look for the links to us, our email addresses. Thanks very much. See you next week.
Draw another breath.